tuned into People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
When Delphi announced their bankruptcy back in October, it was just like a bomb had dropped on the city of Flint. A lot of the workers who understood instantly what bankruptcy meant. It meant our contracts were in jeopardy, their pensions were in jeopardy. Anybody that works for Delphi is really on a life support right now.
People's Tribune Radio provides a source of revolutionary audio programming to people interested in changing society. It is produced in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribunal del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America. In this edition of PT Radio, we hear from Flint auto worker and activist Claire McClinton. She's going to speak with us about Delphi and the current bankruptcy situation. But to provide us a little history, we first have a commentary read by radio personality and president of the Voice of Vashon, Susan McCabe.
Michigan was once the magnet that attracted workers from across the land to the industrial capital of the world. Olds Motor Corporation began in 1899, followed by Ford in 1903. Henry Ford's goal was to mass-produce cars, to move them away from being a luxury item to a commodity of mass consumption. In 1913 in Highland Park, Michigan, Ford unveiled the moving assembly line, the benchmark for the mechanical method of production. No longer would people move from station to station. Rather, the product moved past a mass of human labor who remained stationary. $5-a-day wages were advertised from coast to coast. The moving production line began a global phenomenon and the underpinnings of the auto, appliance, and furniture industries. These industries saw major expansions after World War II from the housing boom made possible by the GI Bill. On through the cyclical crisis of overproduction in the 60s and 70s, advances in technology created a shift in the way industry viewed labor. New electronic devices made possible by the microchip and semiconductor allowed for robots to be stationed along the production line in place of people. The 1980s marked a rapid increase in the use of labor-saving devices with devastating social effects. There were massive plant closures across Michigan, which destroyed neighborhoods, hospitals, clinics, and local grocery stores across the state. There was a wholesale rise in homelessness and a flight of displaced workers from the state of Michigan, which further lowered workers' standard of living. Since 2000, the state of Michigan has lost over 300,000 jobs. Employment has dropped by over 25%, and the region is about to lose thousands more jobs. Flint, Michigan is a good indicator of how electronic production, coupled with disregard for social services, has destroyed communities. In the 1970s, General Motors once employed 80,000 workers in Flint. Today, GM employs around 14,000 people. At one time, Flint workers were the highest paid in the nation. Today, people's household income there is below the national average. Companies are using bankruptcy as a mechanism by which they can further reduce and squeeze their workforce. Most importantly, companies use bankruptcy to abandon their contractual obligations that workers have struggled to achieve. Another aspect of this attack has been the dismantling of the New Deal social programs. Michigan, again, is an indicator of the atrocities imposed by our government on workers. As thousands became unemployed in Michigan, the state eliminated mental health facilities, state-sponsored services, including their general assistance program, forcing thousands to live in the streets. This model even became the framework for national welfare reform passed under President Clinton. This signaled the beginning of the end of government responsibility to the poor. The state of Michigan is changing to meet the needs of global capital and private property. Its response is not to provide housing and food to the thousands out of work. Instead, the state provides tax breaks to corporations that promise jobs they cannot deliver. In order to continue privatizing social programs, the state imposed the law Public Act 72. This law allows the state and Treasury Department to take over any government unit within the state, whether it is a county, city, village, town, or even school district. When such an entity is declared insolvent by state overseers, they send in an emergency financial manager and seize control of the entity's affairs. Three cities have been taken over in such a manner: Hamtramck, Flint, and Highland Park.
The situation in Michigan is destroying the lives of thousands of Americans. Thanks to the Voice of Vashon's Susan McCabe for providing that commentary. She provides us with a solid foundation before we hear today's guest. Flint auto worker Claire McClinton lives in a community whose roots have been at the forefront of the labor movement. The community has seen many positive advancements for workers throughout history, but at the same time, it's experienced some of the most devastating letdowns. From the joyous results of the 1937 sit-down strike, which brought about better wages and living conditions, to the massive layoffs that have forced thousands out of work and into homelessness and poverty. At General Motors in Flint, over 65,000 people have lost their jobs since the 1970s. Delphi split from GM and now employs about 3,000 people in Flint. Out of the handful of their Flint employees, Delphi wants to squeeze unprecedented cuts in wages and benefits. The corporation claims it must restructure the company and its contracts to compete within the global marketplace. Bankruptcy is a key mechanism to further reduce and squeeze the already struggling workforce. Delphi, along with many other corporations, are telling Americans to settle for a steadily declining living standard or a life in the streets. Flint, Michigan auto worker, labor and community activist Claire McClinton has been involved in the auto worker struggle for over 20 years. She understands the effects of Delphi's impending bankruptcy.
One of the strategies in their arsenal is bankruptcy. This is the way they can get out of the contracts. They can go to court and declare bankruptcy. The strategy has been to actually get rid of workers in order to maximize profits. The advent of electronics, of technology, has just washed over the industry like a tsunami or a hurricane. We call it Hurricane Delphi here in Flint. We are being asked to compete with robots and cheap labor overseas. Now, years ago, as union paid workers, we were among the highest paid people in the country, making $20, $25, and $26 and $27 an hour plus benefits. Now we're being asked to compete with Delphi workers in China who make $3 an hour. So we used to be the standard in which other industries and other workers would try to rise up to that level. Now we're being asked to compete downward against a $3 an hour wages. This is something that we just cannot do, something that we will not do.
What's new about the worker situation in Flint?
I think that what's new about it is that the crises in the auto industry has just come to a head. That's the only way I can describe it. And Delphi is just a manifestation of how deep this crisis is. Since October, look at what has happened in the auto industry. Delphi has declared bankruptcy. General Motors has went to the table and negotiated away some of the active workers' benefits and some of the retirees' health benefits. As soon as they got past that, they announced that they're laying off 30,000 jobs. Ford goes to their workers and negotiate a concessionary package to take health benefits from their retirees and their active workers, and then they announce their layoffs. And Chrysler is getting ready to try and do the same thing, but they're just so afraid now that the workers will turn them down that they're not taking that to them yet. So it's just the pervasiveness of it all at one time. It doesn't matter who you are or where you work. If you work for a university, if you work for the state, if you work for the federal government, if you work at the grocery store, if General Motors, and they've did this already, they've come and gotten some of the retirees' benefits. If one of the richest corporations in the world and one of their suppliers can depress the wages and benefits of its workers, what can you say to your employer? You have no leverage when companies of this size can get away with this with their workers. The other thing we need to do is get our arms around is the situation that we face is generated by the same system that put that homeless man on the street saying that they will work for food. And it's incumbent upon us, if we want to have success in what we're trying to do, that we put our arms around the dispossessed and the displaced members of our community, because we're just as surely being abandoned by a corporate global agenda as the Katrina people was abandoned by our government down there in New Orleans. And we need to understand the connections with that.
You're tuned into People's Tribune Radio. We're speaking with Claire McClinton about the results of Delphi claiming bankruptcy. Claire McClinton, what is the immediate impact on workers when Delphi announced they were going to file bankruptcy? Can you describe some of the human consequences of the situation?
When the bankruptcy first was announced, a lot of the workers were so stressed out, a lot of them were filling up the hospitals over there at the plant with stress, high blood pressure, and things like that. They had been referred to their employee assistance program, and that program is available for employees when they have serious family issues, death in the families, grievance handling, drug problems, and other, you know, family emergencies. And a lot of them had to go in and counsel and keep a lot of the workers calm down. It was so stressful. It's a very depressing situation because all of the human consequences of not being able to have a job in this society, the homelessness is rising. There's no stereotype of people who are being hurt. A couple of weeks ago, I had an opportunity to take a film crew from another, they were from another country here, wanting to see what was going on in Flint with the Delphi and GM auto cuts. And we went up to the soup kitchen to talk to some of the clients up there, and we had General Motors retirees there getting fed. We had a family up there of unemployed people who were on their last leg of their unemployment checks were up there. We had people who wanted to talk to the film crew, but they had to rush and go to work. And we had a homeless man up there. So it's just all kinds of people who are just being pressured and pinched. We eventually had to get the homeless gentleman. He was sleeping in his car. Here's a man who's worked all his life looking for construction work. As time went on, he just could not find something to do, and he ended up sleeping in his car. And we took in and helped him and was able to get him some food stamps. This is just becoming more and more typical of the devastation on the people. Flint was recently named number 4 in violent crime. This weekend, we buried 2 seniors in their 70s whose home was invaded. They were robbed and killed. A couple of days later, another elderly man in his upper 70s was robbed and killed in his home. And it's just we're being terrified because we've got desperate people out here doing desperate things. These conditions are challenging our humanity. These cuts and auto and threats of plant closures and robbing people of their health care and everything is just having a devastating effect.
The people of Michigan have been involved in many important labor struggles. Flint is no exception. Can you describe the Flint community history for our listeners?
We have a rich history of social and economic fights. We're just hard-working, blue-collar people, and we don't mind working. We are used to fighting for what we believe in. Your listeners may be familiar with the historic sit-down strike of 1937 when the UAW won recognition from GM, something they said that could not be done. That was a turning point in labor history as far as once GM recognized, then it was like a harbinger for the rest of the manufacturing sector. I mean, trade unionism spread like wildfire after that. So here we are again, and we're talking about fighting to save our jobs this time and fighting for a quality of life and not giving up a way of life that union wages and benefits have afforded us. The outcome of this will be a harbinger for the rest of the manufacturing sector and society as a whole, actually.
Can you describe the history of struggle in the Flint community?
Unlike in bygone years, when you fought for something, the stage of the fight right now is fighting to keep what you have. So it's a little bit of a different fight. As it matures, I'm sure that it will turn into a fight for things. But right now, it's a fight to defend a way of life that the Delphi workers are seeing, that we're not going to abandon our way of life to save the Delphi Corporation.
Given that the fight is different today, what role does the union play in the current struggle?
The UAW has taken the posture, the UAW took the position that they're not going to even talk to the company, speaking of Delphi now, with those outlandish demands that they were making. So they have not even been talking up until recently with Delphi. Right now, UAW, GM, and Delphi are talking, and they're trying to figure out a way how to appease this situation. We don't know what they're going to come out with, but we know we're just going to have to keep putting the pressure on and keep our fight up. We have to accept the bitter pill that we can no longer just depend on negotiations to resolve our issues with the company. And it's bigger than the company, and it's bigger than our union. And we understand that. The workers are in a posture to express their outrage at what's going on, coming up with strategies and tactics of how they can slow production down in the workplace.
Well, if the union, the United Auto Workers, is beginning to negotiate with Delphi and GM, aside from potentially slowing down production, where are the workers taking the struggle right now?
Where are we going from here? We're trying to educate ourselves and raise our consciousness. And back in 1937, in one of the occupied plants, the police tried to go in and take the workers out, eject the workers from the plant. Well, they locked the doors and sprayed fire hoses and stuff on them, and they took door hinges off of some of the cars, and they stood on the roof and threw those door hinges down and beat the police back. And they were able to successfully hold the police back from coming in there and ejecting the workers. So I say we're in a stage right now here in Flint. We're trying to find our door hinges. At the same time, a lot of the workers start banding together to address the situation, and we have been very active with informational picket lines, candlelight vigils. We had a big demonstration down in Detroit at the Detroit Auto Show, and we're getting ready next week to have a funeral, a march, a funeral, and a rally over at the Delphi location here in Flint, because they've ended the spark plug production over there. And spark plugs is what, before they named it Delphi, we always grew up knowing that was AC spark plug. My mother worked and retired from AC. A lot of women worked at AC, and they made spark plugs. They've discontinued spark plug production, and so there's going to be a rally over there at the plant to honor the ending of an era and to keep their sales pumped up to fight this fight that we're in. On the date we have that, that's also corresponding with Delphi going to court to Deep Six, and that is to shred and tear up our union the union contracts. At this point in time, the position of the rank-and-file groups who are coming together to voice their opposition to these outrageous cuts that's being asked of us, but also the UAW leadership at this time has said that they see no way but to go on strike if the judge makes the decision to shred our contracts. They see no other avenue. So this is where the story is at this time.
You're tuned into People's Tribune Radio. We're speaking with auto worker and labor activist Claire McClinton about Delphi's call for bankruptcy. This attempt at bankruptcy is not surprising. Delphi and GM have already laid thousands of workers off. Claire McClinton, what has the process done to the relationship between Delphi workers who are still employed and those who have already been laid off?
In the process of this fight, we're developing a new morality and a new attitude about the people who've been victimized by layoffs and joblessness. Those who work in temporary, part-time, or unemployed at all. So last week, I had an opportunity to go up to the soup kitchen, which I go to on a regular basis, I was invited to speak to a Danish TV station, and they wanted to meet some of the clients up at the soup kitchen. I went up there, something that I've done before, to set it up with the people who run it for the TV people to come in. Well, when I went in and talked to the head director, he told me no, he would have to ask his boss. So I said, okay, talk with his boss. And she told me, and this was something totally new, she told me that they did not want TV people and things up there at the soup kitchen anymore because they didn't want people to be GM bashing and Delphi bashing. I was just surprised because I had been up there a number of times with different medias to interview clients. And it's a new attitude being filtered down about how to isolate poor people. When the man from the TV station got there and I told him I had some bad news, he wouldn't be able to go into the soup kitchen and interview people, but we could stand outside. He said, well, no, let me go in and ask them. And I said, okay. So we all went in. The director called the Catholic Charities office, and he talked to the vice president of Catholic Charities. The man from Catholic Charities talked to him so bad. When the man from Denmark from the TV station got off the phone, he looked at me and said, you know, he told me if I didn't get out of here right now, he was going to call the police. It's a pervasive attitude, a hostility toward the poor and toward the dispossessed. I see that rising up in Flint, and it scares me, and I'm just anxious for those of us that's involved with this Delphi issue to come together with those who've already been victimized by these things.
Who's helping the situation of Flint? Are local governments doing anything? What about Delphi? Are they working in the community at all?
No one has come to our rescue. We're watching our local, state, and federal government. It's just been, the silence is deafening. Steve Miller, CEO, came to Flint about 3 weeks ago to meet with officials. They met with congressmen. They met with the chambers of commerce, and we were not invited. The UAW wasn't invited. The workers weren't invited. None of the people who's living on the street, who's lost jobs or can't get jobs because of the abandonment of GM and this, none of us were invited to the meeting. And we don't have anything but ourselves to depend on in this fight. Is a good source. He was recently given a business award in Oakland County, which is here in Michigan, and it's where the headquarters of Delphi is located. And they gave him an award as the executive of the year, saying that, quote, while views of Miller are mixed, few doubt that if his vision for Delphi is realized, American manufacturing will never be the same, end quote. And further that, quote, the impact of the Delphi changes now and in the future will sweep across the automotive sector and manufacturing in general, end quote. So this is what even the analysts are saying. And when they declared bankruptcy, and even before then, the CEO, Miller, asked the workers to take a 60% wage cut and give up a lot of their health benefits. It's no secret that he wants the Delphi workers to have the same health care package that the Delphi salaried workers have that they changed, and that was that once you retire, you'll have your health care until you reach the age of Medicaid eligible, 65, and then you're done with Delphi's health care program. People need to remember, and some of us used to know this and we forgot it, that we live in a society that's made up of classes, and we have to have our class interests in mind as we fight our way through these things. We could characterize Steve Miller as a spokesperson for the class of capitalists that are interested in making maximum profits at the expense of the rest of the country. They have their class spokespersons and class leaders, and we're trying to create our class spokesperson and our class leaders. Every stage is a particular lesson or something that you can learn from it, but they're trying to protect their class interests. And I'll give you an example of how the Delphi situation has already rallied together the rest of the corporate America
Nissan just announced that they're going to cut their retiree benefits. That's another auto company that's not a Japanese automaker. They're going to do that for their domestic workers to eliminate their health care plans. And their pension benefits are being frozen. Any new employees will have to go into a 401k situation. If you didn't have classes, you couldn't have these corporations copycatting, taking advantage of advances made by another corporation. We all are aware of this, generating the gulf between the rich and the poor in this country, the have and the have-nots.
Claire McClinton, do you have anything left you'd like to share with our listeners?
You know, after all that we've been through over the years, this is like the tipping point, and people are very angry, and they are ready to fight back. They are loaded for bear. It's like we're mad as hell, and we're not taking it anymore. That's the mood of many of the workers, and we don't have anything to lose.
If the workers of Flint don't have anything to lose and truly organize with those who have been forced out of work, a big change is coming. This change has the potential to affect the lives of all workers in America, not just the manufacturing worker, even those who work in an office or on the computer. Corporations continue to show disregard for the lives of their workforce. If people in the United States come together to meet the needs of the poorest in this country, perhaps then we could create communities that no longer stand by as people are forced out of a job and into squalid conditions. Instead of continually minimizing our working situations, we could stand together and say enough profits for executive pay raises and layoffs. We need healthcare, better paying jobs, and corporations that pay as much taxes as the workforce does. We need a new society. That is it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Every month, PT Radio, in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribunal del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America, attempts to share with you information and visions for a cooperative society where everyone can have a proper quality of life. To find out more information, please call 1-800-691-6888. That number once again is 800-691-6888. Also, you can visit us online at www.ptradio.org. I'm Kenny Shook. Thanks for listening in, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.